My name is Liz Kirkus from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC Acra, Catskill, and Hudson.
I'll have some clam chowder followed by beefsteak on rye, pumpkin pie, whipped cream, and coffee.
Hi, this is Phyllis Segura, host of Eating It in the Hudson Valley, a monthly program about anything food-related, like farmers, recipes, local products, and permaculture. I'll feature interviews, my monthly food report, and more. Tune in on the second Tuesday of the month from 2 to 3 in the afternoon on WGXC 90.7 FM or online at WGXC.org.
I want a green salad on the side. Don't forget the French fried pizza pie, garlic and anchovy.
Did you know that you can get free ebooks from your library anytime, anywhere? Check out with your library card and enjoy on popular devices like an iPad, e-reader, and smartphone. Visit your library's website or download the Overdrive Media Console mobile app to get started today.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Purple House. I'm your host, Robert Tomlinson. It's autumn. Autumn has arrived. It's rainy and damp out, but ever so beautiful in the Hudson Valley. And I have two wonderful guests with me today. I'm delighted that they are here. Thank you for coming in. We have Kristen Ripley.
Hello.
Hi. Who you like to be called Ripley, right?
Yes.
So I may refer to you that in the program. And Mr. Jeff Friedman.
Hey.
Hello, Jeff. I'm going to do introductions in a more formal way, but first I want to introduce the topic of today's Purple House, which is the creative economy. We're going to discuss what is it, what are the economic benefits, how does it affect our local economy, where do we go from here, and how does the idea of a creative economy fit into a 25-year cultural plan? So we've got a lot of things on the agenda. So first of all, let me introduce Ripley. She is a printmaker specializing in hand-printed textiles sewn into sculptural pillows, furniture, and bags that are part of a line of functional pieces that she calls Objects in the Round. Ripley's flagship store and studio is located on Main Street in the Village of Catskill since 2014. She received a BFA from Cooper Union in 2005, and we're delighted to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Jeff Friedman, for 4 years, has been the president and executive director of the Greene County Chamber of Commerce. Jeff has been a full-time resident in Greene County since 1985. He has spent his entire life either visiting or hanging out here. From 1985 and 2006, he served as the vice president of the Hunter Mountain Ski Bowl, a large ski resort located in Greene County's northern Catskills. In addition to his duties for the skiing operations, he also served as the managing director of the Hunter Mountain Festivals, overseeing all aspects of the extensive summer programs taking place at the resort. Following his tenure at Hunter Mountain, he started his own company, Septon Development Group, with his partner Seth Friedman. From 2006 until 2013, he served as president of that company. The company specialized in commercial general contracting with an emphasis on green building, as well as commercial real estate development. During his time at the Chamber, Jeff has made it an emphasize. Oh, I've got my words mixed up here. Has emphasized assisting and bringing attention to the services and needs of numerous local nonprofit community organizations. He currently serves on the board of the Greene County Council for the Arts as the treasurer, the Columbia Greene Workforce Investment Board, Board of Catskill Community Center as president, Catskill Creek Condominium HOA as president, and also serves on the board of the Greene County Rural Health Network. You are a busy guy.
Yeah, I probably should simplify my life, huh?
That's great. No, the level of engagement is admired and much needed, I'm sure. So before we jump into this, on a specific note on the creative economy, is there anything that either one of you would like to say about the local art scene just off the top of your head? Is there something that comes to mind that seems like you want to make sure is said?
It's happened or grown organically, and it wasn't quite like this 5 years ago when I first came to this area.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that.
Yeah,
the art scene here has what kind of surprised me, because when I 5 years ago I was starting at the Chamber, and I couldn't believe that if you told me today that this would have been what would happen in Catskill, I would have said you were crazy. So the arts in general, from all aspects, from performing arts to dance, music, visual art, it's been incredible. It's grown organically. Ripley's absolutely correct. Right. It's the amount of talent in Catskill right now, and in Greene County, it's happening all over the county, is just incredible.
That, I totally agree with you. I think that's a really important note to start on, because sometimes communities try and manufacture the kind of thing that we have here. It doesn't work. And if it grows organically, then it becomes placed in a way out of desire and not just need. So let me jump into trying to get us some working definitions of the creative economy, because there are a lot of them. So let me read a few things, and then I'll ask your response to that. The data of the creative economy focuses on the economic value of individual artists, artisans, entrepreneurs, in order to offer it a place at the table where economic development meets place making in a community. The creative economy is defined as the businesses and individuals involved in producing cultural, artistic, and design goods and services. The creative economy has no single definition. It is an evolving concept which builds on the interplay between human creativity and ideas and intellectual property, knowledge, and technology. Essentially, it is the knowledge-based economic activities upon which the creative industries are born. What's your take on that? Ripley?
It's an expansive definition. I think we have to broaden what we understand as creative beyond just the making of handmade goods, and understand it also as the microbreweries and the dance platforms that are happening here.
And the dance is really happening in our area. I mean, it's amazing what's happening with Lumberyard. I know there's a new dance residency up the hill. I think it's Petrino's, I think?
Petronio.
Thank you. So there's a lot of things going on. So we should say that when we think of the creative economy, we're not just talking about artisans and artisans making something in their studios. It can encompass, it's not making Bud Light, but if you're a brewer and you're making a very specific kind of product, you're certainly included in that. Certainly restaurants can be included in that definition. Jeff, you want to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, Ripley hits it right on the head. When you define creative economy, it's anything that is something that someone has developed or created that has a creative spin to it. And it may be artistic. It could be, as she was saying, it could be culinary. Mm-hmm. Chefs are incredibly creative.
Of course.
And so we're seeing incredibly creative foods being developed around here. Dan Kirkus with his bread company, incredibly creative. And I would consider that to be part of, you know, there are some folks who laugh at the term artisan, but you know, an art or artisanal, you know, define what artisanal means. You know, when you think about the creativity in our local economy right now, it's everything from people creating beautiful portraits or photography or any kind of visual art to the incredible explosion of dance in our area or performing arts in our area or the creative spaces like Hilo Cafe or, and again, just, even things like, you know, we've got just in Catskill alone on Main Street, there's people making handmaking and designing clothing, shoes, furniture, ceramics, home goods of any kind. There's a guy who doesn't even have a storefront who's making hats.
Right.
So that's an incredible amount of creativity. So when you say creative economy, there's a lot that can be jammed into that. And I hate to make it such a broad term, but it really is about really creative people, really talented people making amazing goods, services, and products.
So obviously looking at goods as a product and money as in terms of income and investment is one way to look at it. And I want to give us a national stat, and then we'll sort of get away a little bit from statistics. But it says here the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis reports that arts and culture production accounts for, are you ready for this? $463.6 billion of our national economy, which only amounts, oddly enough, to 4.2% of gross domestic product. The arts contribute more to the national economy than do construction, mining, utilities, insurance, and accommodation in food service industries. That is amazing to me, putting that in context.
I'm also wondering if the creative economy is a rejection of the corporate economy and a return to what was once the American dream.
Ah, that's an insightful comment.
Yeah.
So, but let's not also exclude that the creative economy doesn't just happen in small doses, either individually or small groups of people. There are incubators that are really creative in terms of their value and their worth for engaging and building a future that very much encompass the goals of the creative economy. And we're seeing, I know we don't live in the Silicon Valley, but there are areas, there are pocket areas where that kind of incubation is an extremely important part of a company's future. So let's talk about measuring the value of the creative economy. I'm going to read a little paragraph and then ask for your responses. There are several ways to measure a creative economy. It is possible to use the same indicators as other economies, such as producer outputs, consumer expenditure, employment, and trade. Businesses also use valuation, value chains, price, and transactional data. There are additional indicators of intellectual property. However, a measuring intangible such as ideas, design, brands, and style presents a challenge. Furthermore, the nature of the work is different, with a high proportion of part-time workers and with many transactions being non-financial. I'd like your response to that. What do you think? Go with Jeff first. Okay, Jeff.
Well, I think what they're saying there is absolutely true. ACE, the Upstate Alliance for the Creative Economy, which was formed several years ago out of an economic study that New York State did to find out in each region and the state, the study was specifically also focused on the capital region. How much did the creative economy really impact the capital region? What was incorporated in the creative economy? Turns out the creative economy was the fourth largest employer in the capital region when they defined what creative economy was, which was a pretty broad term again, but so, you know, the statement you're making there is absolutely 100% true. It's unfortunately, sometimes the creative economy doesn't get enough credit for how much it's impacting the economy in a local area. And some of the things that ACE is doing right now is to try to bring to the forefront the idea and the knowledge that how do we nurture the creative economy more? How do we make sure that the public and the business world understands its impact and government, make sure that government understands the impact and that this is supported? Because right now, as an economic driver in the capital region anyway, and in our region is, our county is a part of that region, as is Columbia County, you know, how is that being impacted? Mm-hmm. How is that impacting our local communities? I can tell you from my seat in the chamber, almost every community in Greene County is being impacted, not negatively, positively. There's a tremendous amount of investment coming along with these creative economic endeavors. Stephen Petronio, who we mentioned, has created an incredible facility out in the Round Top area in Cairo, with a considerable investment. And we're not talking a few dollars here. We're talking, you know, seven-figure investments. Mm-hmm. The lumberyard is, you know, an $8 million project in Catskill. We're not talking about chicken feed when we're talking about the impact that some of these things are having. Mm-hmm. And you can take it down to the grassroots, like the contribution that Ripley's business is making and other like businesses are making across the county, that there are all these little shops that are creating product that we don't even realize are wholesaling on large scale across, you know,
sure,
the region.
Yeah, Ben and Blake's store.
Yeah.
Village Common is a good example of that. I mean, they're such a success story here, and we're very lucky to have them on Main Street. But there's several people. L&M Studios next to you, same thing. They have a smart balance between having a wholesale, which will help them get through an all-year season, especially when it's winter here, and then they have a storefront. And it works really well. So you actually segued into my next question of how do we measure the value of a creative economy? And what does the creative economy mean to you and your part in it?
Oh, you're so, looking at me?
Well, let me actually, I want to go rip it. I want to sort of feed you some things that maybe you could play off of. So there's things like affordable workspace, a place to make loud music, a place to make films, a place to work on a large scale, a quiet place to work, reflect, and think. We have lots of recording studios in our area, so a place to record, and not to be overlooked, a place for storage. So those are some things that I think might have an effect for you, Ripley, and for other individual artists like myself in the local area. Tell us about working on Main Street in your storefront.
Well, it's very quiet. There's not very much foot traffic on my end of Main Street. I can't speak for the main block in town, but I couldn't rely on making a living based on the people who come into my shop, mm-hmm. so I wholesale my line to about 8 different stores in New York State and Los Angeles and Minneapolis, so that is where I get the bulk of my income is from my wholesales. And I really like having my shop in a storefront. I feel like it gives me presence and helps motivate what I'm doing. And it's great to be part of a community that is supportive of that.
Jeff, your take on some of these things that I mentioned about affordable workspace, the ability to have places where you can do your work, make loud music, work on a large scale.
Well, that's always the greatest challenge because success breeds inflation.
It seems to. Yeah.
So, you know, folks who live in Hudson can understand what's taken place because there the space just became priced to a point where artisans were kind of priced out. And I think that helped to lead to the rise in that culture in Catskill because folks said, well, I love the area and I don't want to go too far. And Hudson's not affordable for me, but Catskill is. Mm-hmm. At the moment, Catskill is in an okay space price-wise, but we are definitely seeing pressure, upward pressure on pricing in the village. And so how do you continue to strike a balance where we're a community or a county that's open to new artists and new artisans and new creative folks while remaining affordable while also growing and becoming more prosperous mm-hmm. and attracting more investors? So that is the great challenge. And as several people have said to me, you know, actually John and Stephen from British Theaters just said to me last night, you know, we have lived in a lot of communities across the country that became gentrified and we were forced out and we moved to another community. Mm-hmm. And they mentioned two places they lived in California that happened to them. They mentioned some place in New York where it happened to them. And now they're here in Catskill and they're hopeful that that doesn't happen again. They don't believe Catskill will just because of the culture here, the existing culture of who Greene County is, who this area mm-hmm. is, who Catskill is, mm-hmm. and that they feel like that will act as a break on that. But that's a challenge. It's a huge challenge mm-hmm. because we're already seeing it. Real estate prices are starting to go up in Catskill. Right. Right. And it's not just commercial, it's residential as well. And the lack of affordable rental housing in Catskill also is putting pressure on the artisan community. So we as a community, governmentally, et cetera, have to really start to make sure that we are aware that this is happening and figure out a way to make sure that we can both be prosperous and also maintain a lane where we're attractive to folks to be able to come here, afford to come here, and then thrive here because they're not mutually exclusive in creating success.
So I do want to talk about the role of an individual and the role of government in sustaining. But first, I also want to try something that we haven't done before in this program. I brought my phone and I hooked it up. So I'm going to give out my phone number, which is 509-607-2855. If you have a question about the creative economy or a comment, please feel free to call in and we'll take it. And you can have either Ripley or Jeff or I respond. So it's 509-607-2855. Thank you.
So, I did want to mention one thing, and I mentioned Ace earlier. Tomorrow night at the Lumberyard. Oh, yeah. You have that. Yeah, okay, never mind.
But go ahead. It doesn't matter who says it. I'm going to make sure that we do mention it. Tomorrow night at the Lumberyard at 5:30.
Yep. Tomorrow night at the Lumberyard, 5:30 to 7:30. The Chamber is a promotional partner on this event with Ace and the Lumberyard. And they're holding a creative economy mixer at the Lumberyard. If you go on the ACE site, if you Google Upstate Alliance for the Creative Economy, you'll see their site. You can click on their site, go to their events. You can register to go to the event. It is free, and there is a panel discussion about the creative economy and what it means with local folks, and Maureen Sager, the head of ACE, is going to be there on mm-hmm. the panel as well. And you're going to meet a lot of creative people tomorrow night, because there are people from Columbia and Greene counties all across both counties who are going to be there, or all across the region who are going to be there. And the theme of the night is the creative economy, its impact locally, its impact regionally, and what's happening. So I really encourage anybody interested in the subject to be there.
I wholeheartedly agree. And it's great. They actually spend a lot of time going around the entire upstate, you know, region to hold these mixers, to get people together to meet. It's a wonderful opportunity to interact. So let me read this, and then we'll get back to the thing of government versus individuals. Because I'm concerned that actually locally, we probably don't have enough wealth and business acumen to support all of the activities that go on here. We rely on outsiders big time, and not only just a visiting tourist, but some big donors. I know that's true with the Thomas Cole House and how they sustain their programs. So an individual versus what role, if any, should the local governments play in supporting the creative economy? What role can the government play in fostering an environment for the creative economy to thrive and then to sustain? How should they do that? So a couple comments here. Creative people who prefer diverse places, tolerant and open to new ideas, power a regional economic growth. Diversity will attract different types of creative people with different skill sets and ideas. So I want to underline that too, that diversity is seen as a strength if you look at the numbers and the data in developing and sustaining a creative economy. The public sector has clear incentives to invest in the creative economy. Aside from the sector's direct impact, its ancillary benefits are significant. To cite one example, Europe's cultural heritage sector is estimated to produce 26.7 indirect jobs for every direct job in the creative economy. The equivalent figure for its car industry is 6.3. This includes a wide range of jobs and skills from construction, repair and maintenance, tourism, startups, and marketing. In addition, creative activities generate harder to measure benefits in equal degree, including well-being. Did you hear that? Well-being? I hope so. Including well-being, social cohesion, and intellectual stimulation. Governments can help create the right conditions for creative economies to flourish during the right mix of regulatory tools for creative entrepreneurs to start and grow their businesses. And Jeff, I hope we'll get back to that sentence with you in a moment. These can include intellectual property, copyright, trademarks, geographic indicators. In addition, governments can provide incentives for creative entrepreneurs, for instance, in the form of tax incentives, vouchers, and subsidized working spaces. Subsidized working spaces. Some of these stimuli not only ease access to finance, but can also help to attract private funders, whether philanthropists or investors. Okay, there's a lot there, but let's jump into what is it that our local regional governments, whether it's village, town, or county, what are they doing that supports this, or what could they be doing? And I'd like opinions from both of you on that. You want to start, Jeff?
Sure.
Thanks.
Well, I can say that the Greene County Economic Development Office has absolutely embraced the creative economy from the mm-hmm. beginning, has recognized its value to the local economy and to the communities, and has invested in it. The county created early on a film office to be a conduit for potential filmmakers and producers to bring to the area their local, whatever, to bring their product here, so that they had one-stop shop, so to speak, for locations, for the logistics that they might need, for any assistance they might need. So right from the beginning, they said, look, there's a value here. That has been successful. We've had a lot of films right. filmed in Greene County lately.
And nationally, film and film media and music is the number one economic, you know.
Yeah, it was an easy no-brainer.
But it's good that they did it.
Yeah.
It's wise, you know, they did that. Because nationally, that proves to be true. That's the highest income-producing creative economy sector
right.
in the country right now.
And through discussions with the lumberyard, they actually encouraged the lumberyard to consider adding a filmmaking wing to what they were doing, or a filmmaking division. Mm-hmm. The lumberyard actually has done that now. So part of their space will be the ability to have a sound studio, a studio there to do filming. And they'll be, their film office will now be supporting films in the county. So so I'm just trying to use a simple example. There are other examples of things that the County Economic Development Office is doing, but we would need like a four-hour program for that. But but they are, they have been very supportive. I agree with you, there needs to be an idea towards figuring a way to combat, and I'm not sure, I don't know, I know I don't have that answer today, and mm-hmm. I think more mm-hmm. study needs to be done on it. I think most communities need more study to be done on it to find that lane where the community can kind of gentrify without pushing out affordable, suitable space for right. creative people to right. grow and as you say, to incubate their understanding. So I'd be interested to hear from Ripley as an artist what she feels either government or community could do to make her more successful, or to help her to be more, not make you be more, but to help you be more successful. Because I think that's important. I think we need to hear from the people who are affected by it so that we can address those things and then try to help change them.
Yeah, it seems like most of the support goes to the already established artists and groups. For instance, the Thomas Hochul House, Olana, the Lumberyard, and now the Microbreweries. So to try to find ways to support the almost the subculture of artists that are being incubated here. I think one thing that could be helpful is accountants, having artists meet with accountants and learning how to create budgets and when do you need to pay sales tax on this, and just having a financial understanding, because I think that's not really wasn't a base of my education, how to become a business person, and I didn't really imagine myself being in that position ever.
Yeah, so that's a great suggestion. And I know we don't want to neglect mentioning that GCCA does have an annual grant program that does tend to get to at least the middle, not the higher up so much, but the middle ground of arts and artists working here, especially with small symphonies and village, you know, on the village level, which I think is very successful. And that's funneled to the state's arts program. But I know that the New York State Council for the Arts does medical opportunities for artists that can't afford to go to the doctor. And it's a great idea to think about that in terms of finances, to have workshops that pertain to how to actually help run your business successfully. And you're right, to make those deadlines, especially paying your taxes and do it on time. That's a great suggestion.
The Green County Micro Enterprise Program, I attended a series of workshops they had, and that was really helpful for providing business plans to new business owners. And then there's, on a smaller scale, there's also things in Kingston like O Positive that help support artists with health needs. And then there's Hudson River Exchange, the Basilica, the Half Moon Market, the Hullabaloo Market. There's different markets that mm-hmm. artisans or craftspeople can participate in. But then...
yeah.
Well, it's... You know, Ripley mentions the microenterprise program, and that's another program that the County Economic Development Department puts on, where anyone can take their microenterprise training. And if you're starting a new business, whether it be creative or not, you can actually the second part of that microenterprise program is actually a grant program mm-hmm. where you can apply for a grant for your business if it's something that meets right. the criteria. Again, it's a program that is funded through grants from New York State, but it's administered strictly at the county level. And
so who do you see about that if you want to apply? That's not channeled through GCCA then? You go
to
the county?
No, that is directly the county. You have to go to the County Economic Development Office for that.
Right on Main Street?
Right on Main Street in the county building.
And is that an annual deadline for projects or is it ongoing?
No, that's an ongoing program.
Okay.
But the microenterprise classes are held at very specific times during the year. And in order to get to be eligible for the grant, you have to take the class.
Sure.
But the Greene County Council on the Arts does do grant programs that are both funded by the New York State Council on the Arts grants and also by the county. Greene County actually, the county legislature actually funds $40,000 a year in what they call the County Incentive Program, which is monies that are devoted and again re-granted through the Greene County Council on the Arts to artists and art programs across the county. And the Greene County Council on the Arts is actually expanding its scope because Columbia County has not had a Council on the Arts for some time. And so
and they're taking on Schoharie
too.
So there will be three counties that they'll be officiating, which is amazing.
Right. Yeah, amazing. And that's because, well, obviously we know art isn't local, although it is local, but it's also kind of a regional thing. And the council has always been the regranting agency for the state money to both Columbia and Schoharie counties, even though it was the Greene County Council on the Arts. They were asked by the state to take on those roles, so they've been doing that. And so this has been the natural progression of that. But I think some of the things that you're talking about in terms of how these things could take place, I think the Council on the Arts can be the place where a lot of that starts and a lot of that happens. Marlene Martin, who just took over as the new executive director of the Council on the Arts, has incredible ideas and has in her past been a great supporter and a great nurturer of community arts and community art programs. And I think you'll see more now coming out of her.
Great.
What I would encourage anyone who is an artisan or a creative person who is interested in anything that has to do with growing themselves, the community, etc., is get involved with the Council on the Arts, because right now the council is looking for young new artists to bring their voice into the council and help guide what they need. And the council, I think, is in a position right now where it is looking to
expand.
I don't want to say alter its scope, but
yeah.
And I'm on the board, full disclosure, I'm on the board of directors for the Council on the Arts,
right.
So I can speak a little bit on it, but
sure.
I don't want to speak for Marlene. In a sense, people have thought of the Council on the Arts as being an old organization, but that's not who it is today. And for the Council on the Arts to deliver some of these things that we're talking about that are necessary for this success in the creative economy, we need those younger, newer voices to our arts community to step forward and be a part of it.
There's another part of that, which is tying into a listener has sent us a text, so I'm very glad to receive it. In addition to younger, I think using this word diversity, or I think multicultural might be more applicable in certain situations, the idea of race, and I don't want to mention race exclusively by itself without mentioning class, because sometimes I think these things get mixed up, that we need to talk about classes of, you know, having less resources, funding, and then race is a separate issue. They do overlap. But so this person has written in and said, can you please ask him why the African-American population has not been included in their favorite opinion of Greene County in opportunities? And before you respond to that, let me say that in my research here, it looks like in the breakdown of the regional, and that's sort of the capital base, so there's eight counties, it looks like about 77% of the creative economy jobs are for people who declare themselves as only white, and 13% who declare themselves as only black. So there's another portion in there for non-white folks. That, however, it seems startling when you read that figure, but that's also the exact kind of breakdown as to our population census. It's strange, but the American population is only about 13% black. I always think of it as much more powerful and you know, involved. So it's odd to see it on paper in black and white. But let's respond to this person's comment. Can you please ask him why the African American population has not been included in their favorite opinion of Greene County in opportunities? So I'll leave that up to you to interpret and respond.
Well, I can't say I have the direct answer to that because some of this is not things that I control. What I would say is, and I don't want that to sound like a cop-out, but what I would say is this, is I don't believe that any of the efforts thus far have been specifically targeting any demographic. I think they've been taking a more global approach, open to all. And I would say that you will see changes in that soon. I think, for one thing, the lumberyard's existence in Catskill specifically, this changes in Catskill you'll see specifically. You're not going to see it. Well, first of all, there is a very small minority population on the mountaintop, so there won't be a lot of effort there because there's so few folks who are either Hispanic, African American, or non-white in that area. But in the valley towns in the county, I think you're going to see more because, you know, programs that are being administered through places like the Catskill Community Center, for instance, were programs that the Lumberyard were specifically doing in the Catskill Community Center, who has a very large African American Hispanic constituency. So those programs were targeted directly at them, both dance, there was dance, there was art, photography, and there'll be more programs coming in the future geared specifically towards that. Mm-hmm. And the new director down at the Catskill Community Center, Jen Dubois, is very, very interested in bringing more and more cultural programming, including music and visual art programs. So there'll be, and that's targeted at our mm-hmm. our youth population.
Mm-hmm. So there is a challenge in here that has stumbled me for many years. And I'm not quite sure how to articulate that. I'm going to ask for help from both of you. But a lot of times it looks like there's the white people putting together programs, asking the non-white people to come to them to participate. So the challenge, I think, is how do you cross-pollinate in an authentic way that isn't about power, but is about creativity and sharing, and where everybody feels good about interacting and meeting each other and interacting and building a new future together? How do we do that effectively? And I asked this question recently at Basilica. Melissa put together a panel on place and the arts. And there were some very interesting, diverse responses. But one of the things that an African-American woman who's a very amazing dancer, singer, songwriter, composer said, how you do the approach is really important. From everything from the graphics to where you approach, who approaches, you know, it signals to people how welcome they are, how authentic it is, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought that was a very astute comment. Other things? How do you two respond to that?
Well, I would just say that in the organizations that I am involved in right now that have some sway in this, the boards recognize this as an issue and have strived to attract board members from a more diverse audience.
Okay, let's talk about that, because there are very few people of color on our village boards, on our village trustees, on our community boards, on our legislature. You know, how do we make this happen? I mean, and obviously it has to start local, and it's great. I assume you mean you're doing outreach. Both the community center and GCCA is doing outreach.
Yeah, the community center specifically has been striving to do that. And the council has been striving to do that. Mm-hmm. I will say this. It has not been easy to get members of the Hispanic community or the African American community to come forward and be a part of those organizations in a leadership role. And I don't know if that's because there's a concern, maybe, that why now? You've ignored us for so long. Maybe there's some concern there. Mm-hmm. But my response to that would be, we have to start somewhere, and there is legitimate efforts being made to make sure that those two boards specifically and the staffs of those two organizations more properly reflect the demographic breakdown in the mm-hmm. region. Mm-hmm. And I can only speak for those two organizations. Why we don't have more local candidates, again, I don't know if it's if it's a cultural belief or a belief within the communities that they either can't win, or if they do, it won't make a difference. I'm not sure. I would love to see that. I would love to see, especially in Catskill, where there is a higher percentage of an African American and Hispanic community than in any other place within the county. I would love to see more candidates that would run for office, mm-hmm. that would be able to give voice to those communities in our government structures.
Right.
And I would encourage them, come by my office. I'll tell you how to do it.
Right. No, I think there's a support system there if someone wants to do it. Let's expand that question and turn to Ripley, too, because there's not enough artists running for office either, I think. I think more artists should hold positions of responsibility in the community. What's your thought on that?
I guess I feel personally somewhat disengaged from that because my work is very time-consuming. I make everything from start to finish, so I don't really have much room for anything else. So I don't know how other artists experience that, but
mm-hmm. yeah. I think it takes folks who are willing to be examples, or willing to be mentors, who are willing to be, you know, leaders who step forward and lead by the example of it can be done. And I think that, you know, all too often when I work with folks in the community, and especially young people in our community, I always hear this common thread, which is, well, that's not something I can do, or it's not something mm-hmm. that I'm able to do, or mm-hmm. there's an inherent doubt, because I don't think that there's anyone that they would say, this is part of my community
right.
that has done it or has encouraged them to do it. So there's a discouragement that I hear from these, mm-hmm. These young folks, these teenagers, even kids who will tell me that they can't go to college because they can't afford it.
Right.
And I'm looking at them and saying, Oh no, you not only can go to college, you can definitely afford it and you could thrive. There's nothing to say that you just have to keep living in, without, hope, I guess is the
right,
word.
Right.
And I don't want it to sound, I hope this isn't sounding condescending in any way. It's just, I get discouraged because for me, I have kids who work in my office who come in through intern programs,
right?
Who almost exclusively come from, either Hispanic or African American families, and we're always encouraging them, further your education. You want to try to be a graphic artist? Go do it.
Yeah,
you can do anything you want.
One of the things I did, I used to run an arts organization in a small town in Washington State, and I looked around and saw the same problem. So one of the things I was able to put through with a lot of support is that every year we created an honorary position on our board of directors that was held by a senior student in high school, and the students themselves had to elect their representative to come forth, and then they got school credit for it. The same thing could be in a village trustee. It would be pretty interesting to have a senior high school student sitting on the board at GCCA, at the village trustees, at the community art center, at the community center. That's a way of saying, we want you here and you are welcome to be here and your voice is important. And those people never come alone. They always bring their friends and family, and that's another kind of form of engagement. I can't help but think there must be a version of that for non-white people, too. I know California just passed a law that said every board of directors has to have at least one woman member, you know, and so, like, it's bizarre that we have to pass a law to get that, but it's definitely a movement in the right direction to try and correct an imbalance. Couldn't we do something more locally here that would embrace that?
I don't see why not. I would encourage it. I think it's... The one thing I would tell anyone is that from the point of view of the Chamber of Commerce, from the point of view of me personally and mm-hmm. from me sitting on other boards, we absolutely encourage and not just encourage, but demand diversity in everything from business to community organizations to what's in our community, because that diversity and those other voices is what makes us better. It's mm-hmm. what's going to make us successful. If we're cutting out segments of our population and saying, they're not part of what we're doing, or they're not going to be involved, or we don't need them, then we're foolishly cutting out some places that are going to have better ideas, ability to get things done. And we're just making a recipe to not be successful. And one thing I would say to Ripley in response to what she said about not having the time, look, the Greene County Council on the Arts has an advisory board. You don't have to put in the time that a board member does or the work, but I'd encourage them to say, hey, I'd love to be part of the advisory board. And that board gives artists and people voice to tell the board of directors what it needs. So I would say contact Marlene and say, I want to be a part of the advisory board, because that board doesn't meet anywhere near as often, and it lends voice to the artist community that there are many artists who don't have the time. But I will say this, on the Greene County Council on the Arts, in their bylaws, a certain percentage of the board seats have to be filled by artists. So I would encourage artists to make sure you're contacting the council, because that's one of the hardest parts of filling board seats for the council is finding artists who can devote the time to guide the direction of the agency.
So thinking about what government can do and what local economies can support, let's talk a little bit about, I'm working with a group of people on a 25-year cultural plan idea that we'll be presenting pretty soon, and I'm going to ask for feedback from both of you on that, of course. But I'm curious about things like, should we have an arts district? I know one of the things that Ripley and I have talked about is this idea of being able to maintain affordable workspace. So if we declared an arts district and had a parallel, you know, quality, or I guess just a way of financing or securing or setting a limit on what certain rents could be on Main Street dedicated towards, you know, people living and working there. Is that an idea you think would float well now? Would you be in favor of that?
I would be in favor of that as an artist who needs a space, but I wouldn't want to be in a factory building.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So I'm trying to get at the idea of, you get to stay where you are. You're in the storefront on Main Street. Mm-hmm. It, you know, as Catskill grows and becomes more popular, which it is doing right now, which is great for most people, you don't want your rent to double. That would disqualify you from being able to stay there, right? And that could happen. I mean, it's not unthinkable if we're not more thoughtful and conscientious about how to sustain and protect what is so special here. So what do you think, Jeff? How can that be put forth to the village trustees that would, they would see that favorably? I mean, I think we are promoting ourselves as a village of makers. That is a key thing that is driving our economy. You mentioned it earlier with Greene County Tourism. I know Heather's doing a lot of work in that capacity, which is really a great benefit to where we live. But how could we put forth a plan that says we need to protect some of these artists that are here? I think there's 5 to 7 artists that have storefronts on Main Street and Catskill. How do we make sure they don't get booted out because the town becomes more popular?
Again, I don't know that I have that answer. And I think we as a community should probably start to research and look out across the country and see if there are other communities that have had success in combating this issue.
Yeah, there are.
Because it really is, there is a real...
threat?
Yeah, threat's a great word. There's a real threat that we could become gentrified and we could become... we could outprice ourselves as a community quickly, and I don't mean that in Catskill specifically. It's happened in Hudson a little bit already. Although Hudson has been able to sustain through other means and continues to grow, you know, there and but it has really become kind of a Brooklyn North situation there, where local folks and artisans who were there early on, or local folks who live there, you're starting to see a clash now. Even with this new with the $10 million that Hudson was awarded for the through the downtown revitalization grants that they won, there's been a clash in communities where the existing population, the local population, is saying, well, what's that money going to do for us? Or you need to create more affordable housing with this money, or you need to create. And so that clash is something that I think every community struggles with. Rip Rick Van Wagner, And I've had this conversation several times where he's saying, well, when all these new shops come in, I hope it'll create jobs for the local people. And that's what we're hoping for. And it'll, and where are the local people going? And, you know, enough so that the local people can live locally and whatnot. And I said, well, unfortunately, what usually happens is they get forced out.
Right.
That success brings a lot of success and they get forced out. And I said, and we need to figure out a way to not have that population forced out. We need to make it so that the town thrives and everybody thrives with it.
That is one of the great questions that, you know, we hope we are asking as a village and as people that have these positions of power, but also that everybody's asking, how do we find that balance between continuing to organically grow our community and have it be expansive and have more people in that will buy art and art goods that the people here locally make, and yet don't become so valuable that they are priced out.
And I think we're seeing a little bit that's being done by a few folks to try to combat it. The Steph Halmos's project at Foreland Catskill, that is an artisan community that she's trying to create there. And some of the work that Rob Kalin's been doing at the Mill Building, the old Orrin's furniture store, has given creative space to people to create and grow their ideas there.
I was looking over Steph's grant, and I know she got $1 million to support her. I think it's a $4.5 million project, if I'm not mistaken. And in the paperwork, it says that there might be a 20-25 potential local jobs when they're done because of that project.
Right.
Is that realistic?
Yeah, I think what she's doing is very realistic. And the nice part, what I really like about Steph is she's someone who her and her family's business has demonstrated this success in the past. This isn't somebody who's created this idea and is hoping that it's going to work. They've demonstrated past success in past projects that they've put on. So they have a plan. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that there's a plan. And I would agree, our elected officials, well, certainly on the county level, they're recognizing this. On the local town and village level, they're going to need to address this at some point. They're going to need to sit down and start to look at a plan that supports folks like Ripley and other artists and artisans.
And also the people who were here before the artists were here, like the low-income housing we mentioned before. If it's not just government subsidized, but if some of the funding that's going towards the Skywalk and the lumber yard, if there's a percentage of that that's maybe set up for building owners to maintain to subsidize those building owners so they can maintain lower rents.
Yeah, and that's something that, again, a lot of times some of the grants that you mentioned, they're generated at the state level. So the state doesn't always see it through the same lens that the people locally see things.
But one thing that we could do is we could pass our version of a 1% for art, and that's all new. The construction of 1% of that budget goes towards, and a lot of towns have gone to a 3% because of the cost of maintaining things. But we could add our own adaptation. It doesn't have to be 1% for purchasing an artwork on the plaza. The 1% could be a general fund that could be used in a variety of different ways to help sustain the people that are already here, make things affordable and livable.
I think it's so interesting that the state doesn't recognize the subculture of artisans here as valuable as like the lumberyard or the microbreweries. Because if you think about Thomas Cole, he started out just as a guy with a backpack who was exploring with his paints. He started out just like everyone here who's part of the subculture of artists. So it's interesting how over decades things evolve, and now there's
I don't want to say that the state doesn't recognize affordable housing it's just that they look at a very large macro view of things. So they will fund specific types of programs. They'll fund specific types of industries. There are grants available for affordable housing. There are grants available, but the incentives to make those things tend to leave. The frustration that the community has had is that it always leaves an empty middle ground. I don't know how to explain it.
So it has to do, I think, with people designing these projects who don't live where they're going to be executed. they don't actually get a lot of the local needs of a specific village or town in order to be able to adapt those funds to serve the general needs of all the people that live in the community.
Right, but I hate to call I hate when it's called low income housing. That's just not a fair statement. Right. But you know, but a lot of the times the things that Ripley's speaking about, the grant monies and the subsidies and the incentives to build affordable housing, is always geared towards the poverty level housing. So it's always geared towards complete subsidy or something like that. And so the developers that build these places they do thrive on these projects because they thrive through tax credits and they thrive through other ways of making money on these projects. And they make a lot of money developing these projects. But then what we're left with is these clusters of you know, what people call Section 8 housing. You know, it's all this housing that's completely publicly subsidized, complete public assistance, and it leaves the people out that you're talking about, Ripley. It leaves out the people who do have a job, who do make a living, who don't make enough of a living, who make too much of a living to be in the housing that's being created, that's subsidized, and don't make enough to afford the housing that's available in the area. Right. So that was the people in the middle
the
that
middle
I'm talking
class.
About. Exactly. So how do you create programs, and the government has done a very bad job of this, on at least on state and federal level, how do you create programs that incentivize developers to develop properties that are affordable for that sweet spot just above the poverty level or a little higher?
Right. So do either of you have thoughts on the recent, how should I put this, the recent decisions on the part of the county legislature to take out a $39 million bond plus take $8 million out of our $11 million rainy day fund while we are $13 million in debt to build a jail? Does that scare either one of you in terms of a future, in terms of specifically other funds that might have been available to do some of these things that we're talking about? I realize some people could say that is apples and oranges, but I don't see it quite like that. But do you have any concerns, fears? Jeff is cringing in front of us. So Jeff, you better go first.
Well, obviously the jail was a controversial issue. The county was going to have to spend money one way or another to deal with its you know, its criminal justice system. There really wasn't a choice. How they got there, how they made these decisions, you know, one could call it sloppy, I guess. But the decisions made,
I guess I'm trying to really, at this point, have a program on the jail. I do want to see, just to make the connection between other resources that might not be available in the next 10, 20, 30 years, in terms of other projects like what we've talked about today.
Well, I'll say this. I know that the county legislature and that the county economic development office are absolutely looking to devote more funding and are absolutely looking to find more ways to grow the economy and to support and attract economy. And that's not really attract business people, attract new residents, attract new creative producers. And so I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I don't think that we're going to be funding a jail so we won't be funding this. I think they're going to try to find ways to fund both.
Okay. Ripley, I want to make sure you have time to comment on this if you'd like to comment.
I would prefer not to comment.
You would prefer not to comment. Okay.
Yeah, I'll just say this, and I need to step away from the subject because the chamber has taken its lumps on the jail. So it wasn't going to be an easy decision. The legislature had to do something. The state was forcing them to do something. I'm not sure that it was the cleanest process, and maybe we may or may not have made the best decision. That the future will tell us that. The die has been cast. We're going to find out now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But on the flip side, I give this legislature and the County Economic Development Office a lot of credit. They are devoting a lot of time, a lot of energy, and they have a lot of new ideas on how to attract more business, more support for existing businesses, and more support for our communities to grow. There's no doubt they're recognizing that. So I don't know where it all will come from, but there definitely is a plan.
So let me end with a couple of quick quotes here. Between 1998 and 2015, the arts and culture sector contribution to the GDP grew by 40%. That is a lot. And that seems to be a good place to end. I want to thank Ripley.
Thank you.
And Jeff Friedman for coming in and working with us today. It was a great topic, and I'm delighted to have you. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
The Lollipop Guild only listens to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM.
Did you know that you can get free ebooks from your library anytime, anywhere? Check out with your library card. And-